Welcome to the Marcia Miyake Show, where our mission is to share thought-provoking ideas, practical tools, and tangible strategies to uplevel your life, business, and relationships. I'm your host, Marcia Miyake, leadership and emotional intelligence consultant, executive coach, and conscious mama of two. Through solo episodes and interviews with experts in the medical, research, business, and spiritual fields, this show helps you to shift from the illusion that success in one area of your life means failure in another, to the understanding that you truly get to have it all. Let's get started. Welcome back to another episode, my loves. I'm so excited to introduce today's guest, Jemaine Finley. Jemaine is a health and happiness coach empowering women to move from surviving to truly thriving. She's a naturopath, NLP practitioner, heart math practitioner, and a personal development junkie who has both the passion and the skills and knowledge to help women transform their lives physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Jemaine's approach to healing is not only holistic, it's transformational. In this episode, Jemaine and I talk about how self-limiting stories and beliefs are created, why, even though we want to, they're hard to let go of, and how we can begin to let go of them now. Welcome, Jemaine. Thank you so much for making the time to be on our show today.
Oh, it's a pleasure and an honor, Marcia. Thanks for having me.
Yay, I'm so excited. So I like to ask this question a lot because I feel like it just gives people an indication of the person's energy and like vibe. But what is like a quote or a mantra that you live by?
More recently, and this would be in the last 12 months, it is that nothing has meaning except for the meaning that we give to it. And more I am working in the group setting, the more and more I'm seeing that take hold. And I find it so applicable in so many different conversations. But a big conversation that I'm having lately is around the lies that we tell ourselves from these belief systems we pick up and carry with us from childhood. And where I'm finding huge transformation for women is to understand that that heaviness that we've carried, that suffering that we've chosen to keep hold of, really is just the meaning that we've chosen to give to a circumstance that may have had other meanings and, you know, other stories behind it. So I find it really powerful. And, you know, people can apply this in the public sense of they're in the office and their boss comes in and just has a lash out or an attack at them. It could be like, oh, he's an asshole, he's this, or, you know, what have I done wrong, and self-loathe. Or it could be, you know, he may have had an accident in the car on the way here, or his family's going through something at home, or you just don't know. And I think it's just a quote that is so applicable in so many ways. And so I've really taken hold of that one more recently.
Oh, I love that. That's so true because, you know, you and I could have like the exact same experience today and we could respond to it so differently because of our interpretation to it. So I would say, you know, everything is objective. It's just, we bring that subjective component to it. So I love that so much. So let's talk about stories because I feel like it's such a huge, such a big part of why we aren't living the lives that we want. It's why we feel stuck. You know, I get that a lot. Like, I just feel stuck and I can't move forward. So I want to get into that, but I know this is your space in terms of helping people overcome their stories, rewrite their stories. And I'm really curious from a personal perspective, like, what inspired you to get into that space? Was it a personal journey for you that you're like a realization that you were holding on to stories, or what did that look like?
It actually is only since being in this space that I've learned the subconscious underpinnings of my own story and journey. But in where I consciously pivoted into this space, I was actually a naturopath. And I had worked prior to graduating as a naturopath in the women's health space for a number of years as a personal trainer, as a PCOS coach, a fertility coach. And then I graduated as a naturopath and I had about 2 years working with women in the one-on-one space. And I realized naturopathy is a very holistic modality, and our motto is, you know, you fix the root cause. And what I realized is it's not really addressing the root cause, because I can give you the strategies and the tools to change the environment and eat better food and, you know, all these self-care practices and give you the supplements and whatever it may be. But if there are belief systems or stories that we're telling ourselves that allow us to self-sabotage or procrastinate or not show up or whatever it may be, then whatever tools and strategies I provide are only going to hold to a certain degree. And I started to, it was then when I recognized the pattern. However, once I started to then pivot and branch out into what I call now holistic, where I use NLP or neuro-linguistic programming, and, you know, naturopathy and addressing the biochemical side of things within the body, and then heart math research, and I guess a whole accumulation of different modalities, that I developed a program where I was working with women in a step-by-step approach, addressing the mindset, the physical body, the heart space, which is what I call the emotional space, and the stuff that we've carried and the conditioning we've carried with us, and then soul, which is, you know, that passion and fulfillment and purpose for our life and where we find joy. And it was once I was in this space and sharing these messages that I started to really apply it within my own story, and I realized I'd created meaning in a lot of the events throughout my own life. I had an alcoholic mother, and, you know, that in itself, what I teach my clients is we have these three power questions, and it is, what's happening, what does it mean to me, and what am I going to do about it? And we ask these three questions even as a child on a subconscious level. And so living with an alcoholic mother, what's happening? Mum's not getting out of bed. Mum's not, you know, getting me food in the morning or getting me to school. What does that mean to me? It means I need to, or someone needs to take care of mum and me. And so what am I going to do about it? I'm going to assume that mothering role. And so you step into that nurturing role. And so first sort of consequence of that is, as I got older, mum and I had a lot of conflict between us, because here I am, her child, trying to tell her what to do, and obviously assuming a bit more of the role that my dad had, which they divorced. So that's obviously very triggering for her in that sense. But then the second and third order consequences, I would end up, you know, being in a relationship where I would be with childish men who need that nurturing role. And as a result of that, would constantly burn out, feel like I just had all these expectations that weren't being met. And it just continued to grow from there. I then had a look at, you know, my parents, they separated when I was two, and my mum remarried and he had four kids of his own, and my father remarried and his new partner, they had two children together, and she had three children as well. And so because it was shared custody, I was between the two families. And so as a child, the story that I told myself was, mum and dad have their own families now. I don't fit in anywhere. They don't love me, or, you know, I'm not important. No one cares about me. And what we do as children, and, you know, you see women or anyone collect these stories, their parents are fighting or arguing, it's because I'm a bad child. Dad walks out and leaves, it's because he doesn't love me. And then as we get out of that parental kind of shelter, life's experience stacked to validate that. We get to school and we get bullied and it validates, I'm not worthy, I'm not lovable. We have our first relationship and maybe he cheats on us or breaks up with us, and it validates yet again, I'm not lovable, I'm not worthy. And we stack these experiences until we become an adult, and it's like we, you know, whatever it may be, we sabotage our own relationships. I have women who come into coaching sessions with me and they're like, I'm so horrible to my partner and I love him so much, I don't know why I do this. And, you know, people who set out with weight loss goals, but they can't stop binge eating. And, you know, there are so many different ways that we can apply this. And really, it can very much come from these meanings that we've created from our experience.
Oh my gosh. I like everything you said, like full body resonance, And I'm going to go back to what you said, that you're practicing naturopath, and the whole view is to get to the root cause. But from working with people and just being out in the field, you recognize that it's actually deeper than environmental things like what we're eating and you know, our exercise and that type of thing, that it's actually deeper than that. And I think that's so important. And when you were talking about your program, I knew there was a reason that I was like, I need to talk to this girl, because I saw you speaking at the Worthy Australia event. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I couldn't find you at the event because it was just so much happening. And I reached out to you after because your story resonated so much with me. But it's that you don't just accept something as that's the answer. You're like, what else? And I mean, we had a conversation before we started recording, which also shows Jemaine's just like approach of what else, right? And your program is just like, it's taking all the boxes because your mind, body, emotional, and soul. And that's exactly my approach on things as well, because you can't just have this unidimensional approach saying like, we're only going to work on your mindset, or hey, we're only going to focus on your health, or we're only the spiritual. Like, it's all of it. And I love that you said you realize that the reason sometimes we're not getting the health goals, or we're going falling back into these patterns, or the woman that was saying like, I'm like so horrible to my loving partner, it all comes back to that story. So it's always a layer deeper than what we think it is. We think the problem is our relationship. We think the problem is our body, but it's actually the belief that underpins that symptom. Like the relationship, the dysfunctional relationship where you were caretaking was the symptom of you feeling your worthiness could only be shown by how well I take care of the other. Mm-hmm. So it was just, that whole sequence was just like absolutely incredible. Can you go over the three questions that you were saying about when, like as a child, when you're observing what was happening in your dysfunctional like home at the time, what were the three questions that you asked?
So the three questions are, what's happening? What does that mean to me? And what am I going to do about it? And so this is very, very deep in our psyche. It's not something that we're consciously analyzing and rationalizing over. It is a part of our survival response. It's really a part of who we are. And when I talk about the mind, the mind isn't intelligent. We have this belief that the mind is this intelligent thing, but the reality is the mind is just, I call it the GPS essentially. So the way I explain it to my clients is, we are a soul or an energy body or a spirit that has a mind and a body, but we are not the mind or the body. And the thing is, we identify as our mind and our thoughts, or we identify as what we see reflected back in the mirror. And the more we attach our identity to those two things, our soul just gets quieter and quieter and quieter, and we become more distressed and frazzled and overwhelmed within our life. But when we're having a look at the mind, if we consider that the body is the vehicle that's driving us through this journey and the mind is the GPS, and when we consider how we program a GPS isn't going to show you roads that haven't been traveled before. It's literally just what's been updated and uploaded into that GPS of what we've traveled in the past. And so that's all the mind is. It's a collection of stored memories, stories, belief systems that have just been stored away. And we do this as a part of our survival because we need, when we're in our stressed or survival response, we need that quick reference point. So whenever we're in a place where there's a heightened emotion at the same time as there's a thought, that holds it and anchors it into the body as a memory, so that when we're in that state of, you know, distress or panic, our mind goes, I've been here before. This is what got me out of trouble last time. And it doesn't matter whether that action is empowering or disempowering. It's just a part of our survival of what we know we've tried before. And we're always going to stick to what's known and comfortable because it's just ingrained within our physiology.
Oh, yes. And you know what's so creepy is right before you said the thing about the bigger the emotion at the time of impact, let's say when the thing happened, I was literally thinking that right before, and then you, like, the words came out of your mouth. Like, it's so weird. I like everything you're saying is like so true. And I really wanted to pick up on your analogy because I think that's so good about the body being the vehicle, which we need to love and respect and take care of. And then the mind being the GPS. And it's so true. Your mind isn't going to take you into the unknown. Your mind is only going to take you into the familiar. So sometimes when we think like, I want to change my life, like I'm ready for something new, but you're working from an old programming still. So unless you go back and reprogram that, you're going to do the tactical stuff of eating better, you know, mindset work, potentially whatever it is, but you're going to still find yourself in the same situations, because as you were saying, Jemaine, it's the, it's happening on a subconscious level. So you're not even thinking about it. You're not thinking about, oh, you know, I'm going to be really rude to my partner. That was me. I didn't feel worthy of love. I was adopted. I was convinced that my parents gave me up because I wasn't good enough. Like if they couldn't love me, God, who could, right? So, and I experienced a lot of like childhood trauma. So when a guy would try to love me, I would be like, in my mind, again, not consciously at all, I had no awareness of it. I only realized like literally probably in my late 20s that the whole time I was thinking, and this is through high school when I was dating guys, was like, if I just push him away or let me show him how unlovable I am, and then it will affirm my belief that I'm unlovable, because then he'll just be like, I can't take this anymore. Like, you're crazy. What are you doing? And then I'll be like, see, it's because I'm not lovable. And we do these crazy things, but I wasn't doing it consciously. I wanted love. I wanted love, but my pattern from my childhood, my GPS kept taking me to these trigger responses of just being kind of a crazy girlfriend until they couldn't take it anymore.
And it's so true. And, you know, this is where, when we create these belief systems as a child, you have to think, you know, typically the stuff that we download is between the ages of 1 to 7 years old. And so if we see it a lot when, you know, a person goes into hypnosis, they kind of go into that childlike speak because they're dropping into that child identity that has that memory. And so as a child, when you're put up for adoption and, you know, people come and go and it's, you know, a child gives meaning to that. And my parents don't love me. They didn't want me. They gave me away. But we can change as an adult, we can look back at that story and we can change the narrative to my parents loved me so much that they thought that they couldn't provide to me in the way that I need to grow into who I need to be. They didn't feel worthy themselves to be able to raise this child to their full potential. So out of love, they, you know, they gave up their dream of having a child. They, you know, for a parent, it could never, no matter what the situation, be easy to just give away their own child. So it came from a place of pure love to be able to do that. And then from the adopter's point of view, you hear people who go through this adoption process and they get adopted into this family and they feel like because, you know, if they have siblings, because I'm not, you know, the blood-born child, I'm not loved to the same degree. And again, we can rewrite that story to think they love me so much that they went through that adoption process. And there are hundreds of kids in that journey and they chose me. We chose each other. And that is a love-based action as well. And so we can often, when we start to have a look at these events in our life, we can really take a look at them again with adult eyes and think, is there another story? Have I collected a story that's maybe redundant or perhaps even my parents? It might not even be my own story. And I've just anchored that in. And now it's my responsibility. My life is my responsibility. And do I choose suffering? Because there's a big difference between pain and suffering as well. So inevitably, as a part of life, we're going to experience pain. We have to experience pain because it's how we grow. And if we don't experience pain, we don't experience life or evolution or growth. So pain is inevitable and it's essential. But when we choose to repeat that pain as the story and recycle it, that is suffering. And suffering isn't essential nor necessary. And that is something that we can let go of. And it's just, you know, you identified your relationship, you know, in the present day when you're having these situations, asking these questions, what's underneath that? You know, where did this come from? And choosing to take that responsibility to dig deep and explore that as well.
Oh, I love that. So pain is an inevitable part of life, but you choose to suffer. And there's a really amazing quote. It was a philosopher. He's not coming to me, but that was basically along those lines that, you know, pain is inevitable, but like we choose to suffer. And I know for someone who is really in their story, like us even saying that is going to be triggering because I shared something like that. And I had all these people commenting, you know, saying, what do you mean? I was this and this is this. I suffered. That wasn't a choice. This is da da da. And I think, and I would love for you to speak on this more, but I feel like, you know, when we choose to suffer, because that's what it is, when us choosing to suffer is us dwelling on that pain. It's us like experiencing that pain in the moment, but then like reliving that pain. Do you think that some people like find an identity in that suffering? And so it becomes too hard to let it go. Like for me growing up for a long time, it was my excuse. Okay. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful to people who've been through trauma, but it was my thing. Like I would be like, yeah, but I was adopted. It excused a lot of behavior and it excused me not being happy. Like I could justify it. So what are your thoughts on that?
Just like you mentioned earlier, as I was thinking about coming into that answer with identity as a huge pinpoint, you said it yourself, but it is, it's, we have to, whatever we class as our identity will follow through as. And when we identify as anything, and people take, I'm going to use the word ego, and people take that as quite a, like an abrupt kind of word. There's a lot of stigma attached to ego, but you can also see it as the protective personality. And so when we identify as something, it's very hard to let go of, and it does become who we are. And if we think, the analogy that I use as well is that our thoughts become our actions. Our actions become habits. Those habits become our behaviors. Over time, that becomes a temperament that then becomes a personality, which then shapes our personal reality. And so you see this identification in so many different ways. For some people, you know, if it might be their way to get attention, if they never got, if they had two parents that were always working and they always had a nanny or were in daycare and they just crave that attention. Maybe they feel sick as a child. They used to always have a tummy ache, so mum or dad will have to come home. And so their illness throughout life becomes the way that they have people come to their aid, and they feel loved when they have that story. So some people live in a place where they're chronically ill because of that. You know, there's a lady, Marissa Pia, who I am a massive fan of. She's a UK hypnotherapist and she is just this incredible powerhouse. And she speaks of an experience where she asked a young boy who had a headache, if, you know, if you could have a conversation with that head pain and you asked him how come he's here, what would he say? And while this child's in hypnosis, he says, well, whenever mum and dad are fighting, I get a headache and they both be quiet and lay down in bed next to me. And so again, it comes back to what we create as a child. And it then does very much become the identity. And I guess a part of the life journey is, I mean, you and I prior to jumping on this call were talking about polarity. And we see polarity everywhere in our life. You know, you've got light and dark, yin and yang, good and bad, you know, sun and moon. And this is an opinion piece, believe that all of us are born into this human experience with a polarity of love or light and ego and or shadow side. And the life experience is experiencing both. You have to experience your flaws for you to be able to know what the decision is, to be able to have the decision of, I don't want to live like that anymore, or I do want to hold on to that because of the attention or whatever it is that it gives me. And when we reach this level of awakening, it is letting go of that ego, which is identifying, like ego in itself is anything that we can attach identity. So I, me, mine, you, yours. And when we start labeling things, those words cause separation. And so we start to go through life separated. But when we let go of those words and we think about we as a collective, or I am a part of something bigger, or and whatever it is, we let go of that ego. And that in itself can allow us to let go of that identity, whatever it is, because we realize it's not about me. I have something to give this world. And if I let go of that and show up as my best self, then I can change others' lives with my story. And, you know, you're this powerhouse woman in the coaching space who is so inspirational, yet you have come from your own, you know, traumas in different degrees. And this is where we see a difference in people who are living in the polarity of ego or shadow and people who are in the place of love or light, because people like Tony Robbins and Oprah Winfrey as well, they take their hardship or their story, and rather than make that who they are, they use that to empower other people. And so again, it's leaving that protective personality and stepping into, you know, I am one of many. And it's liberating when we start to step into that space as well.
Oh, I love that. That was Yes, it was so good. And yeah, how I view ego is just like, as you said, it's separation. And, you know, I'm really big on us moving towards, you know, 5D consciousness, where we realize that we're all, you know, we're all connected. And if I create an identity for myself that isn't of love, I am in my ego. And I love that, in that when people are identified with their story, for them just to remember that their story did impact their lives, and they, and there is pain there, and let's address it. Let's not pretend that it's not there. There was pain, but let's move through that pain so we're able to release it. And then you can look at your story with, oh my gosh, like the same thing with you, Jermaine. That's why when I heard you speak and you had such a powerful message, I was like, yes, she's knowledgeable. Yes, she knows what she's talking about, but it came from a place that at one point there was pain there. And that's alchemy, right? Like, that's so next level to me. And I feel like really that's why we're here, to be in this life experience. It's to experience the highs and the lows, and to transcend the lows, and how can we use it for the greater good? And I feel like we're going into this really like spiritual place, but I feel like whoever is listening like needs to hear that in some way, that your story got you to this point. It helped you survive, but now let's start examining what that story is doing to your future and the life that you do want to create. Like, what is that story costing you at this point? And is it something that you're willing to let go of? And that's something that you help women with. So I would love for you to talk more about that, in terms of, obviously people can reach out to you. We're going to have all of your links, and I know you've got an amazing program as well. We're going to have that in the show notes. And so people can reach out to work with you one-on-one. But what would you say to someone who is still stuck in their story? Like, where can they start if they're just feeling stuck?
Yeah. First thing is identifying it. I will, before I jump in and answer that question, I know that you're speaking a lot to the event that I spoke at and how powerful it was. And so I'll share on that a little bit as well, in that. So what I shared at this event was, in my childhood, I had the alcoholic mother and the separated parents, but I had also experienced at the age of 8 where I was kidnapped and I was sexually abused. And this is where I think it really highlighted to me that you touched on it so perfectly at the start, is our perception of the experience that creates the reality. It's not the truth, and it's just our perception of the truth. And so it was myself and another young boy who were both kidnapped and sexually abused in this experience. And we have a look at two children who went through the same experience, and they both went off into two totally different realities. The young boy ended up turning to drugs, and then he turned to extreme Christianity, and then he would go back to drugs. And then it was just this roller coaster of trying to find something to fill a hole that you can only fill that within yourself. And a lot of the time within that, there's, you know, there may be shame or whatever it may be that we're holding as that identity. And so for a lot of people, we just don't feel comfortable in our own space. We're getting to know ourselves. Whereas I'm someone who shared the same experience, and from that same experience, I learned forgiveness. I saw through what those children had done to us. I managed to see, rather than, you know, they did this to me, they are horrendous people, I managed to come from a place of, my gosh, what horrendous things has happened to these teenagers for them to see and know such cruelty. And from that, I've gone through a journey of empowerment and wanting to change perspectives and change lives. And so two experiences creating two different journeys. And this is, you know, 20 years later, 20 plus years later, and the experience can still have a ripple effect. And so this is where we need to take responsibility for our life now. We can't change the past. We can't change the future because it hasn't happened yet. The only place where we have a moment of control is within the present moment. And we cannot control anything outside of us. And COVID is an epic example of that. You know, you at the flick of a finger, you might be separated from your loved ones, from your children, from your parents. They might be in another country or another state. You know, you might lose a job, and then you're losing your house and all the material things you've learned to identify with as a result of that. We learn our connection, lose our connection to community or whatever it may be. And so if our life journey, if we start our journey with this feeling of unworthiness or emptiness or I'm not enough, a great analogy when we're looking at things like addiction, shopping addiction, food addiction, alcohol addiction, whatever it may be, is this sense of I'm not enough. And so if you're not enough, if there's not enough there, you need to find things to consume so that you feel like you have enough again in your life. The reality is all of these things that we consume can be stripped from us at any moment. And so where we should be investing is in learning how to cultivate a love and respect and a self-esteem within ourselves so that when we have that, we can be the best wife, the best mother, the best friend. We can show up in a community. And when we you look at a lot of billionaires and, you know, successful entrepreneurs and whoever, they have to do a lot of internal work to have the capacity and the resiliency to be able to give to those around them and to be able to still do that in a way where their cup is still full with their own self-care and honoring self as well. And so I guess in a long-rounded story, what women can, well, people can start to do is to start to identify where they're living too far outside of themselves and start to bring that in. And one thing that I always say to people is the word responsibility is our ability to respond in any situation. So if, for example, I was to say to someone who is still living in their story, you know, your life is your responsibility, that could be incredibly triggering because it's like me saying their meaning of responsibility, and there's this big stigma around it, is the other word of fault. You know, it's like they're hearing when I say responsibility that it's their fault. And it's not to blame someone or to pass over fault is to pass over control. You don't have control of the situation if someone's done something to you or if it's that, like, you have an excuse behind it that's outside of your own responsibility. But if we bring that back in and say, okay, I can't change the situation. I can't change my partner's behavior. I can't change my friend's opinions. All I can do is change my ability to respond in that present moment. And so someone might say something triggering, and we might choose to react and get quite aggressive and defensive. We might choose to submit and, you know, swallow our feelings and emotions around what they've just said to us. We might, you know, in a relationship might say, hey, honey, I actually feel really triggered from what you've said right now. Do you mind if I just spend some time thinking about this and we can come back and have a mature conversation about it? And so just in that alone are three different examples of how we could respond. And in that response will very much change our personal outcome. That's the only way we can change our outcome, is when we take responsibility for what's going on within us. In terms of the story and trying to transcend the story, a lot of it becomes self-awareness initially. You can't change something that you don't know is there. You can't, you have to understand what it is that you're trying to change before you can take any action to get any kind of result. And this is why, you know, people who start these diets or fitness regimes, or, you know, they turn to religion or, you know, a business or whatever it may be, they throw themselves at all these things and they either burn out or they drop it and they just cycle through trying all these different things. What is more important is to, I guess what I explain to my clients is, don't try to fix anything this week. Don't try to fix anything at all. Just be the observer. Just walk around and observe, oh, he said that and I felt triggered. Or, you know, something happened and all of a sudden I'm in my pantry and I'm binge eating again. And, you know, what happened in the half an hour leading up to that? How am I feeling? What emotional state am I in? And just observe. Don't try to fix or change anything, because then you can start to find patterns in your own life. And then you think, okay, from these patterns, where are these coming from? And we can start asking bigger questions. If you make a statement, I can't do it, I'm not worthy, or whatever it may be, it's a closed-ended statement. Whereas in a circumstance, if we ask a question, what lesson is there to learn here? What can I do about it? It then consequently leads into an action. And that's what empowers us in making change in our life as well.
I love that. I love that. So first on responsibility, I love what you were saying, because I agree, like taking responsibility, sometimes if you're coming from a really like wounded place, it can feel like it's, you know, it's harsh. But for me, taking radical responsibility for everything that happens in my life is the most empowering thing that I can do when I'm done blaming everybody. Because if I'm leaving it to someone else, I'm like waiting on their behavior to change. I could be waiting forever. So I love that. And the other thing, and I think this is perfect for our listeners, is the first step is not trying to change anything, but to become the observer. You know, that's creating space between your thoughts and your emotions, which I think is so important. And I love the asking questions. So I often recommend that too to my clients in terms of their emotions, if they have eruptions or they can't speak their truth or whatever, and there's a big emotion inside and they can't get it out, is what is this emotion trying to tell me? So asking what that emotion is pointing to. So I love that. Just get curious. Be the observer, watch how you respond to people and situations. And then I loved what you said about your statements of, I can't do that. Like that's closed-ended. Like there's no room for movement there. But if you ask instead, like, what does this mean? What does this remind me of? It's so much more empowering. I love that so much.
And one thing to add to that, when we're looking at being the observer, like what I mentioned, where we can't change the past and we can't change the future, what a lot of us do is we live in a place where we're either remembering the past or anticipating the future, and we lose the present moment now. Whereas when we become the observer, we have to be in the present moment, and we're not the GPS or the mind or the physical body. Because for us, if you consider what observation is, for me to see something, I have to look through my own eyes. So if I can be the observer and observe the thoughts and observe the emotions that follow and observe how my body is responding to that, then that in itself tells me that I am in my conscious state right now. I am in my true being, and I am in a place now that I can make control. And so I think that as a starting point is just so powerful, because it not only makes us more conscious, but it brings us into the present moment again and again and again, rather than being what we're looking at when we're looking at human physiology and going into the stress response. Is the stress response is going to push us into the mind. And so this is where we see people who are stressed out, burnt out, and they on autopilot, just doing what they know best. Whereas, you know, people who take the space and they start their day a little bit more slowly, they're a bit more, I guess, conscious in their life, they have the ability to be creative, to be innovative, to grow and expand, because they're dropping into their heart center and their true authentic self. And it is that being, it is that entity that has the ability to make conscious decisions for where they want to move to next. When we're in stress and autopilot, we're literally just in repeat, recycling the past action and behavior.
Yes, I love that. And I feel like more and more, you were talking about like entrepreneurs and really successful business people, or just anybody that's really successful. Like, you know, in the 80s, it was all about the doing. In the 90s, we started bringing in different methodologies. And now I'm really grateful that more and more high performers are recognizing the power of rest. There's research on it. And when you're the observer, you are truly, truly present. When you are the observer, you can't react. You know how many people, their biggest regrets is because they reacted to something, whether it was in a meeting or on driving, or just not being able, as you were talking about, being creative. You can only be those things when you're truly present. And, you know, I've been doing this work a long time, and I still can work on that. I can still work on being the observer. How much of my day am I still in autopilot? You know, just making sure things get done and taking it off and really not examining my own thoughts and my perspective on things. So that's a takeaway even for me, that I'm just going to be really mindful today about just how I'm being. Like, am I allowing myself to observe, or am I just caught up in the doing? Am I going to be able to really create space between my thoughts and my emotion and really tap into my higher self? Because that's where we get into, like, you know, higher frequencies, when we are able to bring that level of presence.
Absolutely. And that's the difference between a human doing and a human being, right?
Oh my gosh, Jermaine, this was amazing. Like so much, what's the word? Like, I don't know. There's just flow between this conversation. Like, I feel like we could have talked so much longer, and you are incredible. I can't recommend you enough. I love that you right now, especially with what we have going on in the world, like our health is so important. And what I love about naturopath is that they're really looking at your health holistically. And what I love about you is that you've taken it even deeper. So it's not just like physical well-being, but like the whole being. So definitely, if you guys want to reach out to Jermaine, I'm going to have all of her links in the show notes and also her program. Thank you so much, Jermaine. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you too.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be with me today. If you love this episode, please share it with someone. And if you're a longtime listener, it would mean the absolute world to me if you would rate and review this show on iTunes. I love you so much, and I can't wait to connect with you on the next episode. And remember, it's not only possible to have it all, it is your birthright.